Hi, Talia.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing
good
well.
Good to talk to you today. So, we should start by introducing ourselves, probably, for blogging heads of viewers who may not know us. I'm Greg Marks. I'm a staff writer at the Columbia Journalism Review, and I'm an editor of our United States project, which tries to critique, support, monitor, etc., accountability journalism in markets around the country.
Excellent. I'm Talia Stroud. I'm the director of the Engaging News Project at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm also an associate professor in the Communication Studies Department.
Cool. And disclosure, this conversation is happening as part of Blogging Heads Democracy in America series, and I believe all parties involved here are grantees of the Democracy Fund. Could you talk a little bit at the outset about, so the work that Engaging News Project does? I mean, you guys are not a media organization, but you do sort of work that's closely tied to the work of media organizations. So I think it would be great if you could just briefly describe what it is that you guys do.
Yeah, great. So Engaging News Project is dedicated to working with news organizations to try to think about how they can get democratic and business goals to intersect with one another. I think in a lot of situations, you see instances where democratic and business goals don't always go together. So if you have people clicking on a particular story that is a soft news story that doesn't contain much information to help people function in a democracy, then there's a business objective to continue doing those sorts of stories and maybe not do so many hard news stories. But that doesn't meet a democratic objective of trying to inform the public, for instance. And so what we're really interested in is doing the basic research to try to find those instances in which democratic and business goals intersect with one another.
Cool. Sounds useful if you guys can crack that nut. I think the industry would be helpful. I know you've come out with a number of reports over the past few months. Is there any sort of particular finding or sort of innovation or strategy that you're most excited to push for sort of wider adoption in the industry?
So many that I'm excited to push for wider adoption, but perhaps one that's quite interesting right now is that we did some evaluation of what sort of buttons are being used to encourage interaction between commenters in a comment section. So right now you see a variety of different buttons in use. For example, Discuss has the, you know, up caret, and Facebook sorts of applications would have a like button there. And what we wanted to know is what exactly happens when you use different buttons, so getting beyond that like button, because the theory was the like button seems to encourage people to think about what do I agree with politically. So perhaps including a like button there encourages people to have these partisan political reactions to the comment section.
Mm-hmm. Or potentially it does feel like maybe it fits into the whole like snark versus you essentially, whether it's politics or in other forums, you give people stuff to vote for, right? Like you give, you know, there's a sense that what does best on Facebook is stuff that, you know, affirms people's priors or affirms people's, you know, desire to sort of like feel good about life.
It absolutely correct. And I think the like button does exactly that, right? It's like, oh, I enjoy that. And we've all had the experience where, you know, you see a post on Facebook or something and your like just feels like the wrong thing to do. And on that, we actually had a friend of folks on the Engaging News Project who had decided to go and like the pages of both presidential candidates in the last election. And you should have seen the Facebook posts responding to his liking of the candidate that was against his political partisanship that he was quite open about. Oh, what's wrong? Has your Facebook account been hacked? Are you okay? So I think that like really seems to indicate agreement. And so what we wanted to do is, can we envision a different button that might cue a different way of thinking about comments? And so we tested a like button, a recommend button, and a respect button. And we were delighted to find that the respect button does seem to encourage people to click on comments that they don't agree with politically more so than a like button, for instance. And so we think that that's a really encouraging finding. From the business side, we were really curious whether the respect button would yield more engagement on the site. So would people use it more frequently than a like button? Mm-hmm. And we didn't find that so much, but we still think that it can create a more substantive and more thoughtful comment section because it's changing the cue that people are using when they're evaluating comments. Mm-hmm. And so the Texas Tribune actually just yesterday unveiled Trib Talks, and there are on Trib Talk, and on that site, they're actually using the respect button. So we're delighted to see that that one is beginning to be used.
Trib Talks is their new sort of like op-ed-ish type site. Is that correct?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Gotcha. And did you guys have any research on sort of like other actions that people might take after clicking the respect button and how that compares to, you know, existing status quo?
Interesting idea. So we just evaluated how people were responding to the comments in the comments section mm-hmm. and what ones they were clicking on and what ones they were opting not to click on mm-hmm. as a consequence of the respect button. But there's been a lot of interest in terms of how do you measure impact more broadly than that.
Right.
So are there certain articles or certain formats of a comment section that might encourage people to be more active outside of the news site?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've totally cracked that code yet. I think that there's a lot to be learned on how to encourage people to do that and how to measure it.
And what I'm curious, what sort of, how much effort do you, is your sense that news organizations, or at least the individuals that you're dealing with at news organizations, are like eager to try to find a way to make comments work or to, you know, something like comments work? Or, because, I mean, at least among working journalists, you know, the people with the bylines, I think that at many places, not universally, but at many places, there's a sort of like comments are a sewer, and you know, or like, you know, you'll see, you know, more than once I've seen the journalists on Twitter, you know, made the mistake of looking at comments on this piece, and you know, the sort of sense that like it's a lost cause, at least for some among some sectors of working journalists. So how much effort or sort of energy are you finding that organizations are prepared to sort of put towards improvements in this area?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think there's a bit of variability in terms of whether journalists and organizations are interested in improving that space or have kind of written it off as this is a zone that cannot be controlled and we're just going to kind of let it go.
Mm-hmm.
With our own work, we found actually a lot of interest in terms of how do we make this better? I think news organizations see potential in the comments section. I mean, having citizens who are interested in the community, having a civil conversation about a topic can be really informative for a journalist and a newsroom to find out what they understand, what they don't understand. Do they have questions about things? Were parts of the reporting unclear? And can do great work in a community by bringing people together and giving them a safe space to discuss really important topics.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a lot of curiosity in terms of how we can make this space better among some organizations, but I agree with you, not all organizations are jumping on this. How do we improve the comment space overall?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that there's so much potential. Do you read your comments?
I do. You know, we don't get that many on the mm-hmm. site. And, you know, we've had periodic conversations, and I think we have one sort of ongoing internally right now about what we might do to make it better. I mean, one of the things that happened is, you know, Twitter sort of created a forum for a conversation about news content that journalists are very attuned to that was separate from comment threads, right? And it's, you know, in many ways it sort of felt superior to comment threads. And so there has been a sense that like, okay, that the discussion doesn't have to happen, you know, on your site or below the story. You know, but at the same time that, you know, there is, you know, you do see innovation at, you know, a number of sites about sort of different ways to sort of like display comments, you know, different ways to sort of like incentivize users, to really, you know, engage and you know, different amounts of resources devoted to moderating the section.
Yes.
You know, moderation of some sort seems to be pretty key to making it productive and fruitful.
Yes, I definitely agree with you on that. I think that having a strong moderation policy and it kind of enforcing it creates the rules for the community. And I think with comment sections a little bit, you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah, it's true. And definitely, you know, I can say, you know, when you do get a sort of substantive comment that shows, so when you, one of the most disheartening things is, you know, seeing comments on your post, on a post that sort of suggests that people didn't really read the piece or, you know, didn't read the piece closely. You know, even, and so there was a, or, you know, maybe they did and you didn't communicate what you intended to communicate, right? So, right. I mean, one of the interesting things I saw in your report was, like, one of your recent reports was discussion of some, at some news organizations in terms of sort of, like, how to measure what we're at, like, what people are taking away from, you know, from our news coverage. Like, are they actually gaining useful information or just sort of, like, edifying information? And is there, I mean, I couldn't quite tell whether that's just sort of like, wouldn't it be great if we could do this, or if there are actually experiments underway or sort of practices underway to do something like that. Can you sort of, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a bit of background. So we had a workshop where we brought together 10 folks who are involved in digital news and organizations across the United States just for a workshop to just visit about what they're seeing in their newsrooms and to chat about issues that they're facing. And it was such a productive conversation. We had people from TV, newspaper, online, and radio. And so I think that it was really refreshing for them, and it was definitely rewarding for us to hear what they had to say about what was happening in their newsrooms and how they were dealing with the various challenges that they faced there. In terms of what they were discussing, in terms of comment sections and how that would work out, there were a lot of different reactions from all of the journalists that were present at this workshop. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was really a variety of different reactions to best practices for doing some of these sort of things within the newsrooms. I'm trying to think of a specific example from the workshop that I can share with you in terms of what ideas people had. It was interesting to hear that some people were saying things like we should have more reporters engaged, and others were saying it should be more hands-off in the comment section. So really a big variety in terms of their reactions. And I'm not answering the question. Direct me more.
I may be wrong, but I mean, I thought I remembered seeing something in there about sort of like trying to measure or figure out, you know, if readers were taking away from you know, a piece of news coverage, what you were trying to communicate.
Yes. There was some discussion about our first conversation in the workshop was all about metrics. Mm-hmm. So how do we measure things? And one of the workshop participants from the Sacramento Bee said, wouldn't it be great if we could somehow measure comprehension and how much people were learning from the news that we're putting up there? And I don't know how many efforts there are in sincerity to try to do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We were really in the workshop, brainstorm, tell us anything that you're thinking about. One thing that we've been working on at the Engaging News Project that I think at least starts to get there is we did some work looking at including quizzes within news articles. Mm-hmm. And so you could include a quiz on the news article that contains some factual information that was reported within the article. And just from looking at that, you could get a sense of, are people actually reading the article and getting some sort of an understanding by looking at what percentage of the respondents actually answered it correctly.
Right.
So I think that that's at least a possibility for understanding that. And then, of course, there are efforts that are underway at newsrooms right now where they're doing focus groups, for instance, to find out where people look on a site and what they're retaining and where their eyes are going on the news organization's website. So I think that there are some efforts there, but I think we have a long way to go to really close that loop between what the news organization is putting on the site, whether people are looking at it, and to what extent they're really retaining and comprehending that information. And I actually think, going back to comment sections, that that's one space in which the audience has an opportunity to tell people or to tell the reporter, like, oh, wow, I didn't understand this at all. What did you mean by this? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one really helpful feedback mechanism.
Gotcha. I suspect that there's going to be, you know, the sort of like effort on the focus on sort of comprehension it seems to go hand in hand with the sort of the current vogue for explanatory journalism, right? And so, so you have certain sites like, you know, like Vox, most notably, that's sort of like built on that brand. But, you know, obviously the sort of a trend towards a certain type of explainer piece has been, you know, growing in the news industry, you know, for a number of years, probably most readily adopted at, you know, sort of more digitally minded outlets, but by no means exclusively. And it does feel like, you know, as some styles of news coverage or some approaches to news coverage, you know, move a little more towards like, you know, straightforward instructional material, right? Like the line between, you know, sort of like journalism and, you know, educational instruction in some areas gets a little blurry. The search for metrics to measure comprehension seem to be, you know, something that naturally, you know, you'd want to find out.
Yeah, I mean, if you're putting all this effort into trying to educate and inform people about anything, if you don't know whether they're getting it or not, that's a real problem. I mean, as a faculty member, I definitely want to make sure that my students are understanding my lectures, and it's kind of the same sort of principle. Of course, you can't really do the multiple choice test that you have to pass in order to pass the class at the end of a news article, but there might be some way to make it more engaging and more interesting to find out, hey, did I actually get this? And could I give some feedback to the news organization so that the next time they embark upon this sort of journalism, they could write it in a way that I understand even more than what they did this time.
Right. So I wanted to circle back to the respect button for a minute, because you guys are called, you know, you guys are sort of like trying to measure or to sort of bolster audience engagement or, you know, reader engagement with news. Oftentimes, and I'm not sure that this is the sort of frame that you're coming out of, but oftentimes when you there's a group of sort of like social goods that you can imagine that come along with sort of you know, public spirited journalism, right? And so, you know, it's certainly supposed to educate and inform and hopefully, you know, sort of spur civic engagement. I feel like sometimes in conversations about these things, it's also supposed to reduce partisan polarization, right? And if we have a problem maybe of people just sort of choosing like-minded news sources that confirm their beliefs, and if they knew everything, if they had a more sort of rounded, full-fledged understanding of the news, maybe we'd have less partisan discord, strife, and et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I guess I wonder whether that particular logical step makes sense, especially in the light of some you know, research findings in journalism, like what the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has been producing over the past week about how a highly engaged citizenry is often also a more partisan or a more polarized citizenry, and how sort of like better understanding of politics essentially helps you sort yourself into one partisan camp more clearly. So I'm curious as to sort of what you would make of that sort of like line of thinking, and is there in some sense sort of a choice we need to make between which sort of social goods we're trying to sort of strive for through the types of journalism that you're talking about?
Yeah, a fantastic question. So my academic research has been on people's preferences for like-minded news. So I call it like niche news, looking for those sources that match your political predispositions. Mm-hmm. And so in my book on the topic, what I was looking at is what are the consequences of people's preferences for like-minded information, because particularly in today's news environment where there are so many partisan sources from which to select, and so many news organizations are either openly or societally or culturally identified as having a partisan perspective, what happens when people are looking at this like-minded information, given that they really do display this preference for it?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly as you're suggesting, some of the consequences of that, you might argue, are democratically perhaps not what we would want to see. So more polarized politics, people feeling more favorably about their own political point of view and feeling far less favorably about position. But exactly as you suggest, there is potentially a democratic good from that sort of a society. And when people are politically polarized and when they are using like-minded media outlets, they are more participatory in politics. So there's something quite energizing about attending to information that matches your political predispositions. And, you know, if you've ever watched whichever show is consistent with your preference, Bill O'Reilly or Rachel Maddow, it is really energizing. You feel afterward like, oh, wow, I really got to get out there and make sure that my point of view is expressed in the public sphere and that people are really knowledgeable about where this side is coming from. So I think that there is a participatory consequence from encouraging this sort of polarization. But exactly as you suggest as well, I think it's just a tension. We have to think about which one of these objectives we most want. So do you want a participatory culture where people have very polarized points of view and might not be so tolerant about views unlike their own? Mm-hmm. Or would the opposite be the more ideal scenario where, you know, maybe people are less politically polarized and maybe we accept the consequence that they might participate a little bit less frequently, but perhaps they're more open-minded about views unlike their own? Now, that's the traditional way of painting it, that there's, you have to pick, you have to think about which of those two is the right ideal. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's necessary that we have to totally pick one. What I think we need to do is, you know, accept that there is some level of polarization out there in order to spur participation, which is a democratic thing we should want to encourage. What I'm really passionate about is how can we get people to, even though they have strong opinions, which is great, people should have strong opinions, and even though they participate in politics, can we get them to a place where people are still giving some charitable interpretation to a view unlike their own? So they're still willing to say, you know, my side isn't perfect and I can be critical of my point of view from time to time. And the other side isn't hopelessly misled and has no grounding and no reason to respect where they're coming from. You can have a different point of view and even agree and share some of the values of the other side without demeaning them. And I think that that's the part of political polarization and participation that I do think is troublesome. Now, the role of journalism in terms of addressing some of this, I think it's been part of their core for a very, very long time. When we think about journalism and ideals of reporting different political points of view and bringing to light and humanizing points of view that you might not have encountered in your everyday life, I think that's what some of the best journalism does. It questions the assumptions that people would traditionally hold and showcases a totally different worldview in a way that makes you appreciate where that other side is coming from. And so I think that it is nicely embedded within a journalism ethic to consider polarization and to think about what that means. I think that the consequence of not doing that is so grave. It worries me greatly to think that we would have a media environment, and we're not here yet, but that we would have a media environment that consists of partisan news sources on both sides that attract like-minded people who then don't look at the other side. That future really makes me nervous.
Right. I mean, I should add, I mean, part of the, one of the sort of troubles with this conversation sometimes is a very sort of like hazy, like we should be clear about what polarization is, right? Mm-hmm. And like, to the extent that we should worry about it, what are the specific reasons that we should worry about it, right? So that there's, it's often sort of taken for granted, or it's often sort of like lumped in with like any of the other sort of like ills that people sort of see in our political culture. But, you know, there's a decades long, I think, argument in political science that like, that the American sort of system was, you know, insufficiently sort of like polarized, or that, like, you know, the parties weren't, that there should be sort of like clear divides within the parties, and now we do have clear divides within the parties, and the divides, in fact, are sort of so clear and so consistent that it's very hard to imagine how, you know, sort of a politically engaged person could not choose which of the partisan camps he or she belongs in, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have, polarization is just kind of like a fact that we have. And, you know, on its own, it's hard to sort of, you know, say that it's a problem. You know, it may not map very well onto American political institutions, which people, you know, many people have argued. But, you know, arguing for sort of like a, well, people shouldn't be able to figure out whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, which is essentially what a lack of polarization means, seems a little bit weird too. So I think you're right. Like, it's to the extent that we worry about it, it's about sort of like how the sort of tribalism or whatever that comes with it affects political discourse and affects, you know, sort of the way people talk about it, a broad range of issues and the way journalists write about a broad range of issues that are sort of colored by our political allegiances.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense at all?
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't think that there's a problem with having opinions. I don't think there's a problem with identifying with a party. I think our system is set up in a way that rewards that and makes that a really smart thing to do. I mean, I can't even imagine a world if we didn't have parties. It would be so confusing to figure out for whom to vote and learning about all of the
sort of like a municipal election in an urban area, which, you know, can be, especially if you live in a place that, like, I live in Jersey City.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's hopelessly confusing, right? Because we don't have a strong local, a really strong local media institution to sort of like help you understand it. And everyone's a different flavor of Democrat, and
right.
It's very hard to make sense.
Yeah, so what is the citizen to do? We have to help the citizen out a little bit, and I think parties do that. I think where parties go wrong is when people are unable to make reasoned judgments any longer. So they're so affected by their partisan identity that they're not critical of their own point of view in the same way they're critical of the other side. Right. And I don't think that it's a matter of just being less critical of the other side. I think that's a little bit of it, but I think it's also being more critical of your own side. And so still have a point of view, still have a partisan identity, but appreciate that the other side probably isn't completely crazy and out to wreck the United States, and people with that identity are hopelessly misled. That's where I think we get into trouble.
And the way that this sort of like maps into the current media landscape is, you know, is again, you know, one that like people have a lot of instinctive sort of like ideas about, but it feels like, you know, I'm not, you're probably more familiar with the literature than I am, but it feels like the discussion about, you know, how those particular problems either cause or are reinforced by media often feels a little hazy to me. And I saw a study a couple months ago that mainstream, you know, quote unquote mainstream accounts of the IRS scandal, you know, the scandal mm-hmm. about sort of investigations into conservative groups.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm summarizing this right because it's been a while since I looked at it, but sort of mainstream news accounts were just as polarizing in their effect as, you know, sort of more partisan news accounts, right? So people's sort of takeaway or their understanding of the news didn't seem, it was polarized, but it didn't seem to be affected by whether it was a more sort of like partisan treatment of that story or whether it was a more sort of conventional mainstream treatment of that story. And it seems sort of implausible to say that like the people's experience of the news is disconnected from the media ecosystem. But it also, it doesn't seem like it's as straightforward as, you know, you read this particular more partisan treatment and then you're going to have a much more polarized view. And if you would just read, you know, like the network news version of that story from 1957, then everything would, you know, it would be totally different. You know, it's not that straightforward.
It is not that straightforward. And I think that that's just an easy mistake to say like, oh, well, people are looking at like mainstream media. Well, either A, have them turn to mainstream news media and that'll fix the problem. Or the other version of that is have them look at media from the other side and, oh, that'll fix the problem. And that's not going to totally fix the problem because mainstream news media cover issues in ways that send clear partisan cues. So when you have a media report that says Democrats believe blah, 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 Republicans believe blah, 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 they just basically said, hey, Democrats, tune in here, and this is what you should believe, and hey, Republicans, mm-hmm. this is what you should believe. So it can have the same polarizing effect. It doesn't always, though. So we've done some research where we were looking at mainstream news coverage versus partisan news coverage. And in some instances, the mainstream news coverage was not polarizing people to the same extent.
Okay.
But I don't think we know why and when that occurs and how to cover news in a way that that helps people appreciate another point of view rather than polarize. Mm-hmm. And I think that was actually reflected at the workshop. So Sarah Carruthers from the Washington Post actually said during the workshop, I think we actually just need to know what does polarization, because if we don't know that part of this, how can we know how to fix it or how to write stories in a way that encourage people to think about other points of view? And so it was actually a really interesting conversation. Someone else at the workshop was mentioning that they had read some articles about Tea Party activists. Mm-hmm. And how some of them had really gone in depth in terms of their values and why they were expressing the opinions that they had. And the person in the workshop said, you know, after reading that, I really had a different appreciation for that, where they were coming from. And so I think there are stories out there that can depolarize. But I think it's a combination of A, the way the story is written, and B, the frame of mind of the person reading it. Because if citizens approach that sort of coverage as, I just want to criticize the other point of view, or I want to laugh at their perspective, that's not going to have any effect. In fact, it probably increases polarization in those instances. So I think we just need to know so much more about what creates polarization so that people in the news media have that information.
Right. And then, you know, I mean, not that, I guess, just, I don't have much to add about this, but just, you know, we should be, it's always worth acknowledging that, you know, in American politics and media, you know, I'm not looking to get into a sort of a big debate about whether the media is liberal or conservative, whatever.
Right.
But the conservative movement in America is quite clearly, you know, distinct from and in many ways, you know, antagonistic to the mainstream media. You know, not just the sort of like partisan Democratic media or the sort of liberal opinion media. And you know, like, don't have anything new to add to that point, but it's obviously, you know, something that sort of informs, it's a reality that informs, you know, these issues.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. So around like there's been some research that in the 1980s, there was an increase in criticism of the mainstream media by the right, and that they really started articulating that point of view prior to any criticism on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And they were made that criticism more frequently. It was more frequently reported actually by the media that the right was criticizing them, which is another interesting component of how this all plays out. But I think that in contemporary times, we see the left catching up in some ways or adopting a similar mm-hmm. strategy. They're not so much criticizing mainstream media or lamestream media or whatever the catchphrase is, but they're singling out particular outlets. So, I mean, you see
right.
President Obama during the presidential debates in 2008 singling out Chicago newspaper. You see Fox News being criticized. So I think that both sides realize that there's political play by criticizing the media. And I think that that's another component of how all of this ends up working out and why polarization is a tricky thing for the media, because in some ways, polarization meets a business objective, right? You can attract an audience, you can get people really mad about something, get them to share it a lot, get them to talk about it by infusing it with a little bit of polarization. And so that incentive structure, I think, is really dangerous. Do you see that at all at CJR, actually? Any of the polarization? Do you feel it in the response to your articles?
If you write, if you write something that, you know, for whatever reason serves a partisan agenda, it is more likely to get linked by high traffic partisan sites than if you don't do that.
Interesting.
So it's hard not to notice that reality. I don't think that informs our editorial, you know, decisions at all. Mm-hmm. But this goes back to sort of the this really actually goes back to the metrics discussion that we didn't delve too deeply into at the beginning, right? But if you want page views, serving, like, sort of playing into sort of partisan spirits is one way to go after page views. If you want other types of engagement, that approach may not be the one, the one you want to take, right? So it does, metrics are really important and useful, but, which metric you choose definitely sets different incentives.
And I think that that's just such a big and important question facing online journalists today, because there are so many metrics that are available. And yet the one that seems to be on the tip of people's tongue is that page views one. And I do think it can incentivize exactly what you're talking about, which is, if the strategy to get maximal page views is to put a little partisanship into it, then there's a business incentive to do it. So I think
that's right. Really, I mean, I do really feel, I mean, there is, I don't think anyone sort of established like the holy grail of the right metric or the right sort of suite of metrics to use. Yeah. But I mean, I think it was pretty clearly over the past 6 months or year, sort of, maybe longer, but there's sort of a coalescing discussion about, page views or, uniques are not, the metric that, that should sort of stand above all other metrics. At least more and more places are trying to move away. They're probably still the default, but the discussion about moving away from them is well underway.
Yeah, and I really have to say, I just love that conversation because it echoes back to some of the early research on communication and media back in like 1940s and 1950s was magazines who were curious that they didn't want to sell advertising on the basis of circulation numbers. They wanted to sell advertising on the basis of the claim that they reach opinion leaders or these people who are quite influential. And to me, it seems like the modern instantiation of this same conversation that we had, half century ago.
Right. Which magazines?
In the day, the one that they were quite interested in was True Story, which was this kind of celebrity-filled, kind of like a trashy sort of magazine from today. And they wanted to make the argument that their advertising dollars, that their advertising revenue should be higher because they were in fact reaching these opinion leaders that would then share the information more broadly, which is kind of interesting.
Gotcha. Cool. Talia, anything else that we should touch on here? We've actually covered a lot of ground. Anything else from ENP that you want to spread the word about?
I would like to just share just a little bit about our quiz feature. I mentioned it just briefly before, but we did some research and found that when you include a quiz on a news website, that people actually learn and retain the information better than if you just include the information just within an article. So if they actually have the ability to play with an interactive tool and then get the correct information. So if you say this, then something like what percentage of the public supports the Affordable Care Act, and then they guess, and then afterward you say something like, according to Gallup or another reliable polling organization, this is the actual percentage that they found. That people then, if you ask them later about the information, have retained it better than if they just read that in a paragraph. And so what we've been doing is developing a tool that will then be available for free that people can go and create a quiz on whatever topic it is that they might be writing about and then incorporate it in an article using iframe code. And so I'm really excited that we'll be bringing that forward next month.
Cool. That sounds interesting. It'll be interesting to see what sort of adoption you guys get from news sites. All right. Sounds great. Well, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
And hopefully folks out there on the internet found something interesting in this conversation too.
Hopefully. All right. Thanks so much, Greg.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.